Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Tuesday, March 26th. Our top story today, police have been called to a Kent secondary school twice in the space of a week over concerns a gang of young people have been intimidating pupils at the gate. The group were first seen behaving in an antisocial manner outside Sandwich Technology School last Tuesday. Lucy has more for the Kent Online podcast.
Police attended the site last Tuesday after reports the group were visiting and attempting to intimidate students. By the time officers arrived, they'd moved on. However, a 16-year-old girl was arrested nearby a short time later on suspicion of breaching a community protection order. The schools confirmed that lockdown procedures were not implemented because there was no breach of the school site. Head teacher Tracy Savage was also quick to reassure parents that despite what some students were saying, there were no knives seen.
And then police had to be called again on Friday.
Yes, there were concerns from pupils that external people had plans to visit the site again last Friday afternoon. It was taken very seriously by the school and police, who attended the gates at the end of the day as a preventative measure. However, the people in question didn't turn up and the day ended without incident.
And I believe the head teacher has written to parents in an attempt to dispel any myths.
That's right. Tracy Savage has urged parents not to believe everything they read on social media and that sometimes students exaggerate. She says there's no truth to the rumours of people coming onto school grounds with knives or that a group in balaclavas had climbed onto the school gates to get inside. She's asked parents to remain calm and reassured them police are well aware of the situation. The school's also confirmed new fencing is going up around the school grounds, which will include a new back gate.
Thanks, Lucy. In the letter to parents, Tracy Savage has said other schools have also reported incidents, although there are no details on how many have been targeted.
Kent Online News.
A 12-year-old boy has appeared in court accused of attempted murder following a stabbing in Sittingbourne. He's been remanded to a youth detention facility and is due at Crown Court next month. A teenage girl had emergency surgery after it happened in Adelaide Drive on Friday. A group of pro-Palestine protesters are demonstrating outside a factory in Kent today, believed to be manufacturing military equipment to be sent to Gaza.
End apartheid.
Your prophets
are covered in Palestinian blood. Your prophets are covered in Palestinian blood.
Eight activists from Palestine Action have blockaded all three access points into Elbit's Instro Precision site in Discovery Park. They've attached themselves to each other with locks and are lying on the floor. Instro Precision Limited manufactures a range of military equipment. It's owned by Elbit Systems, which is Israel's largest weapons firm. This protester has explained why she's taking action.
I'm here because I've seen what's happening in Gaza and I've seen children being massacred and I don't really know what to do apart from just put my body in the way of the machine that's creating the weapons that's doing that. And so I'm lying here on the ground disrupting business as usual at Elbit because they shouldn't be making weapons.
A Dover woman's admitted being drunk in charge of a child after police put her in a spit hood when she became aggressive. Sammy Jo Wiggins had been heard shouting and swearing outside a block of flats in Woolmer late last July. The 30-year-old from Heathfield Avenue also pleaded guilty to threatening behaviour and racially aggravated harassment. She's been ordered to pay more than £600, attend 30 rehab sessions and wear an alcohol abstinence tag for 120 days. Investigations are underway after a 13-year-old was robbed in Tunbridge Wells. The victim was approached by a group of 10 people and pushed against a shop window on Grosvenor Road last month. One of the suspects is thought to be around 14 years old. There's a full description at Kent Online. Kent farmers led a protest with more than 100 tractors driving slowly around Westminster as campaigners demand action on food security. They're warning cheap imports and unsupportive policies are creating supply issues and environmental concerns. Richard Ash from Sandwich is from the Save British Farming Group. He organised last night's demonstration.
Life has become much more difficult for the British grower and farmer. For young people, there's less incentive for young people to come into farming because farmers are not really valued, we feel, by either politicians or DEFRA or certainly by the supermarkets. And we would, all we're asking is to get a fair return and to be able to stop these imports with, that are less safe, that often they're using chemicals that were banned in the UK many, many years ago in the rest of the world. And those chemicals are still being used, and that food is still being put on the supermarket shelves in front of the British public, when we feel that our own food is far more secure. We could, what do we want? Tell us what we want. Do we want to become a country where we import all our food and we're then reliant on the rest of the world to feed us? Or would we like a group of people that actually know what they're doing and do it safely to produce our food for our British people? Why are we putting food on planes and then bringing it over? And all that damage that we're doing to the atmosphere and the environment, and putting on supermarket shelves for supermarkets to make lovely big fat profits for their shareholders.
Kent Online News.
Figures seen by Kent Online show a huge increase in the money Southeastern received from fare dodging fines last year. They got nearly £2.5 million from people caught travelling without a train ticket, which is more than double the figure from 2022. The number of fines issued actually dropped to around 50,000, but the penalties increased from £20 to £100. Andy Commons is the operator's head of communications. He's been speaking to Lucy.
Last year, we provided just over 126 million journeys across our network. We're a huge operator that provides, you know, and some days up to 500,000 journeys per day. So although there are some people who don't pay for their fare, over 97% of our customers do pay. And I think they would rightly expect us to make sure that those rules apply to everyone. And so for the very small number of people who don't pay for their fare, we do have the powers, and I think people would expect us to use them to make sure that people who are trying to travel without paying have a deterrent against doing that. And if they continually refuse, either on the day or you know, further down the line, we have methods in place, like all train operators do, to recoup that money, either through what's called a penalty fare, or if they refuse to pay that, there's obviously the opportunity to take them through the courts as well.
Now, it's interesting because the actual number of fines issued last year went down, but the amount that Southeastern received went up. Could you just tell us why that is?
Yes, yeah, so the number of penalty fares we issued last year actually went down 14% compared to the previous year. However, the number of people travelling with us actually went up by nearly 10%. So the percentage of customers who are not paying is reducing in real terms, despite the number of people travelling going up. The reason for the increase in the money received is that because last year the government brought in new penalty fare amounts. So the minimum amount that you would pay increased, and that was for all operators right across the country. That was clearly intended to be more of a deterrent to people who consider you know, trying to get away with not paying their fare. And I think that's pretty clearly shown in statistics between 2022 and 2023, that despite issuing quite a lot fewer penalty fares, the money received by Southeastern did go up during that year.
So would you say that's worked then as a deterrent?
I think if you look at the figures, fundamentally, we carried a lot more customers last year compared to the year before, but the number of tickets issued went down. I think if you look at that from a Southeastern point of view, but actually right across the rail industry as well, it seems as though it has worked as a deterrent. We are, you know, fundamentally issuing fewer tickets. We don't actually want to issue any penalty fares. That would be the ideal, that all customers pay for their fares in the same way that all customers, you know, should pay for their shopping at the supermarket. We would obviously like to get to a place where it's not needed. But I think if you compare last year to the year before, it certainly appears as though the increased penalty fare has worked as a deterrent, with fewer fares issued despite the number of customers continuing to increase.
You know, any of the kind of excuses or reasons people give for not having a ticket? I mean, I know we're in a cost of living crisis still. Ticket prices have gone up again recently. Is that something people are maybe saying they can't afford it, so they think they'll chance it without buying a ticket?
There are various sort of reasons that people will give, and when people have made a genuine error, like for example they bought slightly the wrong type of ticket for that day, or perhaps, you know, tried to pay with contactless where at a place where it's not possible, our team will take a common sense approach to that and can judge that on the individual merits. What we do find though is there is a very small but quite hardcore group of people who just chance it on a consistent basis. You know, they're hoping that they can sort of get past ticket barriers or no one will check it on the train. Clearly that doesn't work. We can see from the numbers here that people who do chance it are caught, perhaps not caught every time, but they are caught. And when those penalty fares are issued, they are significantly more than the ticket they would have paid typically is. So it really boils down to quite a small minority of people who are sort of fairly consistently trying to get away with it, as opposed to people who have made sort of genuine errors on a day here or there, in which case we can obviously take that into account.
Workers at a Kent manufacturer are out on strike today over a dispute over pay and conditions. Employees at the Phinia site in Gillingham say the company has removed paid lunch breaks from their contracts and they're being asked to work longer hours for less money. There have also been accusations of bullying and discrimination. Plans have been revealed to build a new housing estate on the site of a factory in Sittingbourne. The development in Staplehurst Road would take over the Marco Industries warehouse as well as the commercial offices of market researcher Medici. If approved, it would include 44 houses. A decision is due in May. Political party Reform UK has been criticised over a leaflet opposing plans to turn a former Faversham care home into a centre for asylum-seeking children. The pamphlet described the project at Kiln Court in Lower Road as a threat to the safety of women, children and vulnerable people in the area. They've been accused of spreading disinformation. The centre is scheduled to open in July.
Kent Online News.
Papa John's have confirmed plans to close 43 UK branches, including in Sittingbourne and Tunbridge Wells. Bosses say the sites are underperforming and not financially viable. They'll close in mid-May following a consultation process, but it's not clear how many staff will be affected. If you're planning an Easter getaway, you're being warned to expect delays at the port of Dover. France has tightened up security checks following the concert attack in Russia last week. Bosses say it could increase border processing times. A barbershop in Hythe has officially reopened almost 2 months after a car smashed into the front. Best Man Barbers in the High Street suffered £10,000 worth of damage in the crash. The driver fled and so far no one has been arrested. The owners say they're more determined than ever to make the business a success. A new record shop's opened in Dover offering paid jobs to people with learning difficulties and autism. Audiobox is part of B-Mix, a group that provides experience and opportunities to those who might not otherwise get them. Four people will be working at the shop learning how to maintain stock and deal with customers. Nicola spoke to Steve Perry, who's from B-Mix.
We came up with the idea several years ago and just didn't have the premises to open it, really. And we moved into the Charlton Centre in Dover, and the front of the shop wasn't being used for anything. So we thought, you know, that now's the time to start this up. So we worked at it for about a year. And the reason why it's important is because it creates opportunities for people with learning difficulties to gain skills in employment, and also enables them to be seen and be heard and belong in their community. You know, because there's so much that people with learning difficulties and autism have to offer in the workplace.
Fantastic, Steve. And do you want to just give us details again of where you're based and when people can go along to the shop? Are you open throughout all of the week or is it just at the weekend?
We are. We're open Mondays to Saturdays, 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And we're based in the Charlton Centre, which is in Dover on the High Street.
Liz Clayson works with the staff in the shop.
It is going really well, but so much has been done to make this happen. When we say the decorating and so on, I mean, even down to painting the chandeliers, I mean, people have really gone to town and got really interested in making the place colourful and vibrant. Also, there's so many other things that happen here. Maybe Ty might like to say a little bit more about the things that he does, because you don't just serve in the shop. I don't like to say just, because it is a big thing to serve in the shop and serve the customers. Ty is absolutely amazing at it, and he really welcomes people in, talks to them, have a long chat with them. His knowledge of music is outstanding.
And here's what Ty had to say.
I enjoy music the most out of this lot, I think. And always banter, always.
That's good to hear. What sort of skills has it taught you, Ty? A
bit more behind the desk work as well, a bit more. Till work more. And I think a bit more people skills more.
Kent Online News.
Chatham's historic dockyard is set to receive a £2 million cash injection from the Cultural Investment Fund. The money is designed to help carry out repairs, renovations and to improve the visitor experience. It comes as the RNLI is celebrating their 200th anniversary with a new exhibition at Chatham's dockyard. RNLI 200, the exhibition, tells the story of the life-saving service from oil-powered vessels to boats packed with cutting-edge technology. Sophia Aiken from our colleagues at KMTV went along to see the exhibition and first caught up with Nick Ball, who's one of the curators.
The RNLI is such an institution in the UK and Ireland. So to be able to facilitate the celebration of this 200 year anniversary, it's been really important. And as I say, they're a really long-standing partner of ours. We've already got the lifeboat collection here. This has been the home of the historic lifeboat collection since the mid 90s. So when they talked to us about doing a 200 year exhibition, we jumped at the chance, really.
What you know about this lifeboat behind you as well?
So behind me, there's a Mersey class all-weather lifeboat, and she was at Ramsgate lifeboat station. And she's come out of service now, and she's been handed over here at the dockyard. Actually, there was a ceremony at Windsor, and the lifeboat will now join the rest of the historic collection in the covered slip here where we host the historic lifeboat collection.
My name's Fiona Trent and I'm a volunteer crew member at Gravesend RNLI lifeboat station.
Can you believe that it's 200 years since this all started?
I know, it's crazy. When we came in this morning and had a look around the exhibition, it really makes you feel quite insignificant in the timeline of everything. Obviously we're aware of when it started and how it started, but looking at all the different artefacts and the people that have been crew before us and the lives that have been saved by people who were crew before us really does blow your mind. It's mad.
You must feel so proud to be a part of this.
Oh yeah, totally. And I'm really proud to be part of the RNLI family, because with television programmes you see the guys and girls who are out at sea saving lives, but it's so much bigger than that. We've got the water safety advisors, we've got all of our volunteers that work in shops, in fundraising, that sort of thing, and even the members of the public that generously donate, they enable us to go out and save lives. They're all part of the RNLI family as well.
So my name's Hayley Whiting, I'm the RNLI's Heritage Archive and Research Manager, and the Heritage team have co-created this exhibition with Chatham Historic Dockyard.
So tell me a little bit about what's gone into organising an exhibition like this.
Yeah, it's been a huge project. Almost one of the problems we have is we've got 200 years of history and so many amazing stories of courage and bravery and innovation to tell. So it's been a real challenge, but a real pleasure to be able to bring this story to life. So we really take you back to where it all started in 1824. So I think people will learn that how we came to be and that vision of our founder, but then really taking you through the evolution of our life-saving service. So at the core, we've always been a charity that saves lives at sea with volunteers, but what you'll see is the evolution of the safety, of the crew kit, of the lifeboats themselves, of the role of women within the RNLI, and really how we become the charity we are today.
Yeah, it's changed so much, hasn't it? Especially, I think the most memorable thing is the life jacket, kind of how it looked then and how it looks now. It makes you think, how is this service going to look in the next couple hundred years?
Definitely. So in the 1820s when we were formed, the crew would have had no life jackets at all. They would have been going out in open rowboats, which to us now seems phenomenal. And yet we have the only original cork life jacket from our collection on display here, which is wonderful to have out. And yeah, really we'll take you through that evolution, and yeah, who knows what the future will hold, but the safety of our crew is always the most important thing, and that's why that life jacket was introduced in the 1850s, and we're always looking at the safest way possible for our crews to go out on those services.
A youth club on Sheerness that's been under threat of closure is set to continue for another year. Vibes has been carrying out two sessions every week since October, but KCC will stop the funding next month as the local authority looks to balance their budget. Swale Council have stepped in and will keep services running until 2025.
Kent Online Sports.
Football now, and there have been some developments off the pitch at Gillingham, with Joe Comper being named the club's managing director. He's been overseeing operations off the pitch for the last 10 months, but will now work alongside director of football Kenny Jackett. Chairman Brad Gallinson says Joe understands his vision for the club and will help realise that. Staying with football, and Sam Corner signed a new deal at Maidstone United. The midfielder is the first member of George Ellacobi's squad to agree terms for next season. He famously scored in three rounds of their incredible FA Cup run this campaign, including winners against Stevenage and Ipswich. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.